Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. This is our post-match reaction to the Everton game. 4 days after the game, due to the social media boycott, I've had a weekend off and Villa have won a game. So, Matt, if I can have every weekend off, it'd be preferable for my working week. That'd be nice.
Well, yeah, we wouldn't know the difference, would we? You know, you have most days off anyway, don't we? Yeah.
Social media boycott, the whole world of football took part in it. We took part in it as well. Matt, do you just want to explain for those that might have missed the memo why we were a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it is good to be back. The sun is absolutely blaring in my eyes, so it's a sign that Claret and Blue is back to brighten your day. It was really important that we supported this boycott, and you know, my own personal view is that it's a drop in the ocean, and that it's only the start. It's a gesture more than anything. It's where we go from now with it. It's a horrible place and a lovely place, social media, at the same time. And we've seen some examples with Villa, haven't we? You know, Tyrone Mings has been the victim of some horrible abuse. Anwar El Ghazi even was forced to shut down some of his accounts because of the grief and the abuse that he was getting. We see Gabby Bonlahor on his Instagram sharing some horrible, obscene things that he's subjected to. And there's three massive groups of people to me who can solve this. One is the social media companies who can react to abuse the way they clamp down on infringement of copyright. They seem to have no trouble jumping on that straight away, but they don't seem to have the same kind of zero tolerance with racists and with, you know, horrible, horrible trolls. There's the rest of us, the good people who can kind of help wage this war by saying we're not going to accept it, we're not going to tolerate it, we're not going to bring our kids up to think that that's the right way of doing things. If we see that kind of behaviour, we're going to call it out and we're going to front it up and say it's not acceptable. So we can do our bit. And the third bit is the horrible, vile idiots themselves who just need to think, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it for attention? Are you doing it to get a rise? I don't understand the motivations behind it. And I think until we can get all those three things come together, as much as a boycott is good and the right thing to do and a right message to send out, I think we're just going to be paying lip service to it. So, like I said, you know, it shows how much social media dominates your life, because I've been kind of trying to reach for Facebook and Twitter all weekend. You know, I've been bombarded with people saying, Matt, are you the medical officer out of line of duty? And I've had to kind of take a vow aside and say, no, it's not me. It dominates our life. So, you know, hopefully it sends a message that this is not the way to behave. But from my point of view, it's just the start, of what we need to do.
Yeah, agreed and well said. Just quick on the line of duty thing, no spoilers for anybody. I was watching that. My parents said, they text me saying, oh, is that your boss in line of duty? And I watched it and I read the message and I was like, talking rubbish. Looks nothing like him. The fact that you've had it flagged to you as well, it's bizarre.
Oh, mate, me mentions have been pinging like nothing else. You know, people could obviously Nigel Boyle, no spoilers, who played an important part in the resolution of the drama as Buckles. He's a big Villa fan. And people are saying, oh, Matt, has Villa Boise been able to get you a walk-on party line of duty? What's going on? I think, cool. I mean, listen, the fellow was a handsome chap, but it wasn't me. Yeah.
Another big bald head. Anyway, back to the football. Ash, you were at Goodison Park on Saturday night. 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday is always strange. But Villa win for the first game in four or five, I think. Yeah. Fulham was the last win. And we were pretty good, weren't we?
Dan,
before you've got to introduce it as the most played fixture in English football.
Sorry about that cliche. Ash, do you know how many games it's been between Villa and Everton? Quick quiz question for you. I don't know the answer, by the way.
You should know it.
It's something like 280, I think they said.
Yeah.
I might be wrong there, though. But yeah.
Always referenced, ain't it?
Yeah. Big game and a big win for Villa.
All come together, yeah. Crazy, really. I tied up the Mountain goal in the first half and it was 11. It's just peppering Everton for fun, and Watkins should have had a hat-trick. And if it weren't for Jordan Pickford, Villa could have been 3 or 4 ahead at half-time. So, all come together. Just where's that Villa been hiding last 70, 80-odd days? Just chalk and cheese compared to the last few weeks. It was down in the doldrums, 2 wins in 11. Where are we going from here? And win at Everton. European dreams back on, isn't it? But, yeah, Smith came out fighting afterwards. He weren't happy with people saying, we're coasting, we're on the beach, nothing to play for. And he said that in his dressing room team talk. He said, you're all writing us off here. We're questioning our professionalism. And they come to the fore. So, yeah, brilliant. I mean, in terms of the team itself, nothing much changed, really. The last few weeks, perhaps more of a mental battle with them, with themselves. And that belief was there on Saturday night. And look what they can do. They did it at the start of the season. And they proved to themselves they can do it without a Jack now. So, it just bodes well. Five-game shootout, I've labelled it. Can they do it? You won't back against them, to be fair, mate.
Well, I'll answer that question about Europe in a minute. What do you think changed, though? Because, like you said, the bulk of the team is no different, really. Ross Barkley's come back in there. And to be fair, he was better than he's been in recent weeks. I made a joke to a mate I was watching with saying, you know, you play against Merseyside clubs by the looks of it, with his performances against Liverpool and Everton. He looked a different player and much better than what we were used to. Is it just a case of we found a bit of form with, honestly, I said, nothing to play for towards the end of the season, but there is a slight chance that Europe is still on the cards with the permutations of how the cup competitions end, which we'll try and unpack in a minute as well.
Oh, man, yeah, but they're just all honest from the off. Everton are there for the title. They've been poor at home themselves. And I think it must have been Smith's rallying cry to him at the start of the week, trying to prove a point, getting them going. Bertrand Traoré, that's his best game in a long time. Our guys have come to the fore with 10 to go.
Yeah.
From back to front, everyone was brilliant. Watkins as well, in front of Southgate. He's got to go to the Euros now after that. He was immense. Just on his own up there, but incredible. Yeah, to a man, for Villa were excellent. Ross Barkley as well. A good game for me, first time in a long while. Is that deal back on? I don't know what supporters are saying about that. I mean, get a good Ross Barkley fit and for him. He's worth it, isn't he? But yes, he hasn't shown it on a consistent basis. So question marks there. He's got a point to prove with 5 to go. So listen, we were saying nothing to play for last week. Everything to play for now.
What do you make of that result, Matt?
Well, Cash says it's kind of, as much as it's restored some confidence and some belief and something on the rest of the season, it is, you know, and I understand Smith being a little bit annoyed for, you know, people writing off his team, but there was a reason why people started writing off his team, and that was because they've kind of fallen into the shells for recent months. So, to me, it's kind of, you know, we're a demanding fan base, like all football fans. We want the best of our club, best our club can be every week, and set the standards now. You know, we said after Villa went to Leeds and did a job up there, and albeit not as convincingly as they did at Goodison on Saturday. You know, you've proven you can find a way of playing and winning without Jack Grealish. Now, doing it once every 2 months doesn't, to me, seem like a convincing plan B. Doing it kind of, you know, winning 2 games out of 4 or 5, and I might start to be convinced. But something as kind of, I don't know, triggered Villa on Saturday. And you're right, we know that team can win football matches producing 6s and 7s out of 10s, providing they've got Jack Grealish, who's carrying the fight and working the magic. Without him, they've all got to be at it. They've all got to be kind of at 7s and 8s and 9s to get anything in the Premier League. And hopefully acts as a wake-up call. Hopefully they don't rest on our laurels and we finish the season strongly now.
What would you do with Barkley? There's somebody in the comments clear my throat saying that they'd try and loan him again rather than do a permanent
On the back of one performance. I'm not convinced about it. Listen, I think there's a cracking player in there. I think we've seen some glimpses along the way, but this was supposed to be his big chance. This season was supposed to be his big chance. The time that he reminded people that Ross Barkley was one of the top half a dozen midfielders in English football. You can't do that. You can't do that with a series of 4 or 5 out of 10 performances, and then just throw a 6 or 7 in every now and then. I don't know. I just don't know where he fits with Villa's recruitment policy, really, of getting the profile of people really, really hungry on the way up, big sell on value, that competitive fee, right age, big sell on value. I don't think he particularly fits that mould.
I don't want to make a direct comparison, even though I'm going to try and do so, with Lingard. Just a player at a big club who's out of form and not getting a look in at Man United. He goes on loan to West Ham in January and kind of rips up the league and in talk of getting back into the England squad and all that kind of stuff. Barkley similarly at Chelsea, not in it, gets a chance to go to Villa, starts well and then fizzles out. You're not going to sign somebody on the back of his overall season performance, I don't think. He's done a job for this season in some respects, but next season, if Villa want to push on, they're aiming for higher than a 6 out of 10 Ross Barkley, aren't they, I think?
Yeah, they believe a lot in Jacob Ramsey as well. I think Smith raves about him. They've got Carney Chukwuemeka coming through. He's making waves for the 23s. I asked Smith about him on Friday. He said he's got a first team route mapped out for him. That's how much they believe in him. He's only 17. Everyone's seen him rip it up against Newcastle last week. And they fully believe in him. So I can't see him pushing through with the Barkley deal at all. But he's got a point to prove with 5 to go. Can he help Villa's cause? Everyone wants to see Villa climb as high as possible. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Smith's side has always finished strongly as well. You put a piece together, Ash, of his recent season finishes last year. Obviously, a strong end to the season, keeping us up the year before the playoff push. Strong finishes to seasons at Brentford as well. If Villa are to get into Europe, which again sounds mental to even say out loud, but with the permutations of how things go with the cup competitions, Villa are going to have to win what? 3 of the last 5 to even stand a chance, do you think? And it's Man United in there, Spurs, Chelsea. So it's a tough ask, isn't it?
It is a tough ask, but yeah, they've set themselves up for it. I think the performance and the manner of it on Saturday gave them huge confidence going into the United game on Sunday. United got Roma, big time against Roma on Thursday. And then, it's all eyes on Villa Park. So I don't think there's the last time Villa beat Man U at Villa Park, Matt. 90s.
It was the old can't win anything with kids, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Oh, when was that? 95, 96? Blimey, yeah. I was a teenager. That's how long ago it was,
I wasn't born. I think it was August 95. I'm sure we've talked about this before. It was just before I was born.
So, yeah, I mean, now's the time to do it, Go ahead.
Think we'll do it. I mean, we'll talk about Man United specifically in a minute with what Roy Keane said about Grealish over the weekend as well. Their game with Liverpool called off due to fan protests. As much as Man United are, where are they in the league? Third or fourth or something like that? And second, there we go. They're on the up more than they have been in the last 5 years. I don't know, it seems like they're in a bit of a mess, but they're in a Europa League semi-final and second in the Premier League, but it doesn't feel like the same Man United of 10, 15 years ago.
Now, you just be interested to see how the players react to Sunday's protests and whatnot with the performance on the pitch. I mean, all eyes on Man U now for the running. I mean, the scenes on Sunday were crazy. I went to the zoo with the baby, come back, had my Sunday dinner, I put Sky on, and the guys were bowing, and I seen all the scenes. It was mental. Couldn't believe it. Will that affect the players and Solskjaer? It could. I mean, it's just anarchy, total chaos behind the scenes at Manchester United at the moment. And what Roy Keane was discussing, I mean, Grealish, if you're a player, you wouldn't touch him with a bars ball at the minute. So yeah, didn't get that at all. But man, you were there for the taking. Yes, there'd been a bit of form of light, but them scenes on Sunday must have some effect on the squad.
I wouldn't. Whether it's me being a kind of cynic from bitter experience or what, but I think United are still. They won 6 out of the last 7 or something. I think
on form, yeah.
And they're unbeaten for a fair while. I don't know. There's still a dodgy penalty in there. And there's still a couple of dodgy decisions going against Villa. What I'm intrigued about, Ash, where'd you go? Dudley Zoo?
No, I didn't actually. I went to Telford. So
there's a zoo in Telford?
There's a zoo in Telford, yeah. On the way to Telford. Dinosaurs and everything. Jurassic Park. I think Penny was, had nightmares on
real
the
real ones.
Yeah, real ones. That is good.
God, I've not been to Dudley Zoo for years. It was a dump last time I went. Have you been, Matt?
Worth going, Matt. I think our colleague Woolley was there yesterday, mate. Whether they kept him in overnight, I'm not sure. But, yeah, it's definitely worth going, mate. I'm all for the Dudley tourism trail, mate. Me, so get along to Dudley Zoo.
What a town. Let's talk about the Europa League chances then. Flash up the league table. Villa sitting 10th. Now, before Everton, I've kind of written off Europe, and I think I still have, to be honest. I'm resigned to the fact that we probably won't make it, as I hit my microphone. But they were saying during the commentary, like, Villa's aim, like, you're finishing the top half, that's something to aim for. When you think about mid-table mediocrity, if you finish 14th, 12th, 10th, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But when you look back on seasons and you see Villa in that top half, it would look nice to finish 10th or higher. And then you beat Everton, you still got a game in hand over a couple of them as well. 48 points for Villa. And like I've said, I don't know what the permutations of the cups are. Me and Ash, we tried to work it out before we just came on air, and we fell into a rabbit hole of where Man United might win the Europa League and what that means for the rest of it. But during the commentary of one of the games, they were saying that potentially eighth place can get into the Europa League next year if certain things go a certain way. Do we know what these permutations are? The FA Cup result, who wins the Europa League? If it is eighth place, but they're only 4 points off that with the game in hand.
They've got Everton to play as well, don't forget. Yeah. Next Thursday. So they've got that return fixture to play. They've got four sides above them to play, like the five. Palace is the other one. They've got Tottenham as well. And so they could catch them. I mean, all rests on the other team's form, doesn't it? Villa need others to slip up, to be fair. Villa need to go on a right good charge, similar to last season in the playoff year. So it's an aim for the squad to do. It's up there on the wall for them to go and get. So the carrot's there for them. They've got something to aim at. It's not mid-table, mediocrity, like you say. So why not? The carrot's there.
They're not going to finish sixth. I think that's too far out of reach. Tottenham are already, what's my math? 8 points ahead, I think, with only five games to go. But if it does come down to eighth, I think, so if Man United won the Europa League, they go into the Champions League. But they're already going to finish in the top four. So I think that affects the placing somehow. The FA Cup final is Leicester-Chelsea.
Yep.
So the result of that gets into the Europa League, but they're going to finish in the top four as well. So I think it keeps dropping down a Premier League place. So if it does go all the way down to eighth, all Villa can do is try and win as many of the last five games as they can, finish as high as they can. And if it just so happens that they get in there effectively on a technicality, that's a massive bonus for Villa, isn't it, Matt?
I need to assign the explainer to somebody, don't I? I need somebody to get stuck into writing that because, I can't follow the maths. There's so many permutations and stuff like that. But to me, listen, it's a very kind of boring manager-like thing to say, but just see how many points we can get from these last five games. I mean, there's still a bunch of... We've beaten Everton, but we've not suddenly become world beaters. There's still lots of some very tricky fixtures in there. Yeah. You know, we've got Man United, who we haven't beaten since 1995. We've got, certainly haven't beaten at Villa Park in the league since 1995. We've got Tottenham away. Have we gone there and won at the new place? I don't think we have we?
No, we played there once, first game of last season.
Here he comes with his terrible omens. and then we got Chelsea at home. So to me, as much as I'd love us to kind of gate crash our way into Europe through the back door on the last weekend of the season, I'm actually targeting, shows the limit of my ambition. I'm actually targeting ninth place now, because ninth place is where we finished 10 years ago under Houllier, against the odds that season, to be honest. And I think if we can get up to ninth again, it almost kind of starts to complete the symmetry that we kind of almost reversed in the last 10 years. Do you know what I mean? we've had that time in the Championship, and we've been kind of middling around the relegation zone like we were prior to the Championship. And I just think it's just a statement that, okay, we're back on a solid footing. Now how do we kick on? Now how do we replicate where we were between 2007 and 2010, which was getting into the top six. So I think it's possible. I think hopefully, like I say, it'll be the kick up the backsides that the team need to know that they can go and compete. There's no more excuses. And that these fans, albeit still distant fans, are kind of, you know, we're not going to settle for those half-hearted performances. We need to finish the season with a flourish.
If we do sneak into there in the last place available, would you be put off by the fact that we're in the preliminary rounds of the competition and probably playing the first fixture of the week after the season finishes? Or do you just not care that you're in Europe, so you take it?
Yeah, it's not that ideal, is it? It's not ideal, is it? So, yeah, I mean, say a lot about the transfer policy this summer because the squad needs beefing up again, doesn't it? Smith said he needs to add more depth to it. So, look, I mentioned this last week as well. There could be up to seven first-team players leaving the door. So, it all points to a big summer. And if they're scraping to Europe, then they're going to have to have another big summer recruitment wise. So yeah, all to play for, like you say, but Smith, just get as many points as you can. That's all you can do.
Where do you think this summer ranks in terms of the importance of the transfer window in the last 10, 15 years? Is it make or break between Villa getting into Europe next season?
It's a hard one, isn't it, really? Because obviously they've set the bar now. If they finish a top half finish ninth, like Matt says, what's the next aim then? You can't be finishing ninth again next season or 10th. So they've got to show some progression. I mean, in terms of the market, I think that they'll go big again. I asked Smith about another striker, perhaps, but he said it all hinges on Wesley. He hinted at that, saying that they'll give Wesley ample time to get ready, see if he's sharp enough for next season. If not, they'll look to go into the market for a new striker, I guess. But I think it's a big one. Get Grealish back in there. I think Trezeguet's out for 9 months now, so he needs replacing. And your Almos and your Taylors are looking like they're off as well. So the squad needs bolstering in terms of importance. It's okay, every summer window is important. But I think Watkins will be double the player next year. Same with Cash and whatnot. So that'll be ever improved. Hopefully Traore kicks on after a bit of a mixed bag this season. So I think it is a massive one. It's an important one to bridge that gap, like you guys have mentioned. Bridge that gap to the top six. They need to start in quality again.
I think the important thing from my point of view is that they hold on to the crown jewels, and that's not just Jack Grealish anymore, is it? That's Jack Grealish, that's Emi Martinez, that's Ezri Konsa, to name three. And A, they need to hold on to the best players to build. B, a way of holding on to the best players is by signing the quality to supplement them. To convince those best players that they can achieve their ambitions with Villa. So I think that, listen, Saweris, Edens and Perslow are too smart as businessmen to think we're going to spend stupid money just to keep players happy. But they know that this project has benefited from having its forward momentum at every step of the way. And I don't think they don't want to stall that. I don't think they just want to consolidate and consolidate and consolidate. I think they want to see tangible progress every summer or every season rather. And I think that is probably going to mean a spending spree, the likes of which we've seen in the last couple of summers. The big question is how thinly spread is that money? You know, Ash is saying there that we could lose half a dozen players who are out of contract. And so we've been speaking on several podcasts whether we think now is the time to blood some of the youngsters, and can some of the other kids have the kind of impact that Jacob Ramsey's had in terms of getting regular football this season. I think it's a real kind of balancing act between bringing the extra quality in but making sure you've got enough bodies and kind of strength in depth, really. I can see Villa bringing in another five players across a raft of positions in the summer, which, again, if you're talking 140 million quid, how much does that get you in today's market, and what level of quality does it get you? But I think I don't think it's going to be a tumbleweed transfer summer. I think there's going to be plenty going on again.
Do you think there's any danger that any one of those big names leaves this window, a Grealish or Martinez or someone like that?
Go on, Ash.
No, not for me. No, I mean, what clubs would take them, to be fair? I mean, I spoke about this yesterday. Perhaps only Man City would take Grealish. I can't see Grealish going anywhere else. But then, I don't think that's on the agenda this summer. Sam is Martinez. Kant is going to stick around. Well, I know contracts don't mean a fat lot, but they're doing what they can, Villa. They're securing the long-term assets. Matt Target was the latest one last week. Signing a new long-term deal. Smith mentioned about building around that heartbeat, he says. And that's your Mings, that's your McGinns, that's your Targets, that's your Cancers, Grealish, Watkins. So, and don't forget, this is the youngest side in the Premier League as well. Like the 20 teams, Villa have the youngest average age, so they're going to be even better next season. Just need to add quality again, genuine quality, real quality, and that's going to cost you a book or two, isn't it? So, but behind the scenes, lots going on behind the scenes. Smith says, Johan Langer, sporting director, he's been working with Rob McKenzie, head of recruitment since Christmas, before then, for this summer's window. Knowing January wasn't going to be too busy, so there's irons in the fire. It bodes well because the beef at the scouting department tenfold. We've seen the guy coming from Doncaster Rovers looking at EFL talent as well. So I think it points to a big summer, like Matt says. I think, yeah, I can see 4, 5, 6 new additions coming in, replenishing the players that will head out. You kind of her hands. Tom Eaton will probably head out. His deal's coming up to an end, and players aren't getting a look. And I think Villa will add quality and competition for places.
Do you think there's a player in this squad who will, for want of a better phrase, do a Matt Target next season? A player that we looked at this year and think, oh, they probably need replacing, and then all of a sudden another year in the Premier League does them well and they're a big performer next year?
Well, we've never seen Morgan Sanson, have we, really? He'll be like a new signing. He's still out injured. He hasn't played much at all. 14 million quid for Marseille. He could turn it on next season. He's been watched for a long time. Smith watched him when he signed Gilbert in the January of 2019. So that's how long that deal has been worked at. Bertrand Traoré, I want to see a bit more of him. We've seen him in flashes this season. Haven't seen him on a consistent basis. What can he come on strong next season? But yeah, I think we need a winger, creative player in there to supplement the likes of Watkins and Grealish. I mean, Barkley probably head back. We spoke about Barkley earlier, but he'll probably head back. And I think Villa needs some real strength and depth at the forward end of the pitch. Defence has been solid this season. You guys think, I think they've been brilliant, haven't they? Can't really fault the defence. Keepers, best in the league for me. Yeah, just the midfield's a bit of an issue. Douglas Luiz, McGinn, they've been playing different roles and whatnot. And does that need bolstering in there? Nakamba, what's his future? So there's loads of questions, but I think Villa need to add 4, 5, 6 new players, yeah?
How do you assess the squad, Matt?
Same, really. I mean, it's interesting to say. Will somebody kind of step up and be the man next season? You know, I'm still crying out for McGinn to be the player that we think he can be. Whether he's the one, I don't know. I think these 2 or 3 or 4 players in danger if they're not the ones that they could find themselves being eclipsed or steamrolled in Villa's mission to become a kind of, you know, a club that can compete for Europe again. It's, you know, I think we were gonna chat about Anwar El Ghazi, weren't we? Obviously he scored the winner on Saturday, and you know, I think you've just said that Villa have tweeted out, was it 8 goals in 12 starts, which is phenomenal when you look at it in those terms. But I suppose it begs the question, why is he only starting 12 games? Because he's not being consistent enough. Do you know what I mean?
A few penalties in there as well, to be fair.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm not trying to do the lad down. That's an impressive goal return for a winger, you know, especially in the Premier League. But what do those guys need to do to make themselves undroppable? What do they need to do to kind of future proof themselves at Aston Villa? And it comes down to consistency, and that can only come from, well, it can come from them, and it can come from the coaches. But I don't know. I think we find in this place now where the kind of, you know, the escalator that the Villa players are on are getting steeper and steeper, and if you can't keep up, you're going to drop off and be replaced. And we've said this several times. It's a good place to be because it should hopefully keep standards really high. And any of the current squad, you know, there's probably some exceptions who fans will remind me about now, but any of the current squad, if they're forced to leave and seek football elsewhere, they'll go with kind of, you know, a big pat on the back because they play the part in rescuing Villa from the doldrums to get. We're talking about Villa potentially trying to kind of gatecrash Europe. I don't think that will happen this season, but the fact that we're even having this conversation after some of the years that we've had, and that squad and that set of coaches have been responsible for restoring that pride. So, like I say, even if they are surplus to requirements, you know, thanks for getting us back to where we are.
Yeah. Ash, can you just give us a quick roundup of all the loanees as well before we go? I know you've looked into these this week.
Oh, yeah, checked in with the loanees. So, I kind of hard hands open to get Swansea promoted with the playoffs. They've got one game left. They're in the playoffs now. So, they're looking like they're having Bournemouth, but Horahan's dropped out the starting 11. His form's dipped off a little bit. He didn't get on onto the pitch against Derby at the weekend, so he's a bit out of favour at the moment. But if there's any magic to have in the playoffs, Horahan's your man, so he'll be hoping to come to the fore for Swansea. Elsewhere, it's just not happening for Indiana Vasilev at the moment. 20-year-old American, Villa supporters know from coming into the side last year. He's at Cheltenham at the moment, made his first cameo at the weekend in seven games, sitting on the bench the last seven games, so not really working out for him. Gilbert's doing really well in France for Strasbourg. He played 490 against Marseille at the weekend, 1-1 draw. He's been getting rave reviews over in France. He did an interview last week, a Q&A with supporters. He wants to return to Villa, so I don't know what supporters are thinking on that in the comments. Gilbert wants to come back to Villa and fight for his place with cash next season. I'm for that. I think he's all right. I think he's a committed player. I think he lacks that quality on the ball that Cash has, but he puts it all in. He's really athletic. I think he's good cover. So he's doing well in France. That loan period for him has been really good, a successful one. Lovre Kalinic, remember him? Dinsby's first signing, a Croatian goalkeeper. He's playing every game for Hajduk Split. He's their captain now. So he's really, really benefiting from that loan. I think that made permanent in the summer. He's back in the Croatian setup as well. So he'll probably be on the bench against England in the Euros opener at Wembley. Elsewhere, Samata, he's not getting a look in over Fenerbahce.
Christ, I forgot about him.
Samata, yeah. Remember him? Great dog.
Scored the last goal I scored in the flesh. Yeah. The last goal I scored in the flesh.
That's how long ago it was. But he's going to go to Fenerbahce in a permanent on July, 5.4 million. But he's not really playing much for Fenerbahce. So that might sell him once again, to be fair. But yeah, not really happening, really, other than Gilbert doing well. Kalinic doing well. And that's it, really. No one really pulling up any trees. Young Finnish goalkeeper, Sini Salo, he was at Air United last month. He's back now. He's back at Goodison Park. Little quirk there. He was warming up Martinez and Heaton, under-23 stopper. So Neil Cutler rates him quite highly. Will he step up next season if Heaton does move on? Who knows? But yeah, general roundup there is Gilbert and Kalinic are doing well. That's about it. Horahan, hopefully have a safer Swansea in the playoffs. So keep an eye on that one.
Do you think any of those come back and make an impact at Villa?
Probably Gilbert, to be honest. I like him as a character. He says all the right things. I follow him on social media. He's really good. And he's been performing really well for Strasbourg. So with Al Mohammadi leaving, I think Gilbert will probably come back in and fight Cash for a place. Villa have Kane Kessler in the under-23s, who's really good. People are telling me he's more than ready for first-team football now. So he'll be knocking on the door as well. So I don't think right-back will be an area of need in the summer market, Dan.
Yeah, agreed. I think we'll wrap it up there for this morning, our first podcast back. Just quickly before we go, we'll end with the Europe conversation, get fans commenting as well. When you look at that league table, gents, do Villa make it into Europe next season or not, in a word?
No.
Also no. it's too much of an ask, isn't it, I think? But next season, the progression is if Villa finish 10th or 9th this year, it has to be Europe next year.
Well, what if it's not?
That's not a question I'm prepared to answer this morning, I don't think.
No. It's been a brilliant season regardless for me. But yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Anything else to add, Matt, before we wrap up?
I can't believe you coming in giving your ultimatums, you know. Europe or else.
just putting it out there.
I'm gonna pin your big head on the dressing room wall. That's what I need to do, mate.
Yes.
Don't need to bully me. Thanks everyone for tuning in this morning. We do appreciate you all watching along, and sorry we couldn't answer more of your questions. I've tried to weave most of them into this conversation anyway. Thanks Matt and Ash for joining me as well. We might be back later in the week with something, I'm not sure as yet. Ash, we might do a preview episode or something on Friday. Yep. If not, we'll be back on Sunday afternoon, I think it is, for the Man United podcast. Is that awesome. You and me, Matt?
It's a good question, actually, that. I'll get back to you, mate. We'll discuss this off there.
All right.
Really clashes with Everton Colts.
Okay, fair enough. All right, thanks, everyone, for watching. We'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to Claret & Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, up the Villa.